podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Michal, and we have a special guest, Kelly Ross, here to talk with us about her book, Descent, which comes out in 8 days now, is
yes.
it?
Yes. Oh, holy days. Cow, I cannot believe Ooh. It.
I know, crazy, right? And yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about BEA, because we were all just there this past week, kind of hanging out and checking out books. So first, of course, we're going to start with what we've been reading. And Michal is going to kick that off with what she's been reading lately.
Well, last week I read We Were Liars, just too late to discuss it with you guys, which I really enjoyed, and it made me cry at the end. And what else am I reading? I'm reading a fantasy novel called The Emperor's Blades by Brian Stavely. And now I'm also reading one of the ARCs that I got from BEA, Afterworlds by Scott Westerfeld.
Very cool. I've yet to bring my books in and look at them thoroughly. I know which one I want to read first, but I think I'm gonna be really, really good and set it aside and make myself read the things I'm supposed to be reading for review first. And I can't touch that one until I do it, because otherwise I'll be done with it. I'll sit down as soon as we're done with this and read it at this point, because I'm it's in my hands. I have it. I want to read it. But I shouldn't really. I should wait. I should savor it later. We'll see how well that goes. I have no impulse control when it comes to that sort of thing. I'm nope, I want to read this, so that's what I'm going to do. So we'll see what happens. This past week, I read a book called The Truth About Alice. And it is a fascinating, fascinating book. It has to do with this girl. And it kind of has a lot to do with, slut shaming and bullying and that sort of thing. And the idea is, it's a really cool concept, because it's not written from her point of view. You don't ever hear her voice until the very last chapter. So there are four people that are telling the story of Alice and all of these horrible things that she's done, supposedly. And it's the most popular girl in school, who kind of has a crazy mother. The girl who was Alice's best friend until these rumors started to happen, and she kind of helps perpetuate some of those rumors. But she doesn't want to go back to being the girl who was nobody, so she joins the crowd in making fun of Alice. There's a boy who played on the football team. He is not one of the boys that is involved in the incident with Alice, but he's one of those boys' best friends. And then there's, the absolutely geeky outcast that kind of befriends Alice eventually, because nobody else will speak with her. She basically gets totally shamed. So it's set in this small town in Texas, and there's a rumor that starts that Alice slept with not one but two guys on the same night at the same party. And, of course, one of the guys is the big hunky football player that everyone's in love with. And, of course, if he says it, it has to be true, right?
Right.
So other turns of events that happen in this book is, within a month of this happening, that boy dies in a car accident. So now, even if it's not true, there's no one really to say that it's not true. So it kind of goes on, and it's almost through the whole year of school for this girl and all the different things that happen. And these four people are telling what they see of Alice, what they see happening around Alice, and what they believe really happened that night and, various times after that with Alice. So it's this really interesting look at how rumors spread and how people perpetuate lies all to suit themselves. It was a really fascinating look at some of that stuff. So I found it really interesting as to all, how it kind of played out and how it worked itself out in the end. Because you don't really know if she did or she didn't, because you don't really hear from Alice again until the very end. And eventually you find out what's true and what's not. But it's so crazy. It was a really interesting story. And I liked it because it had a lot, it was just such a unique look at storytelling, I think, because you have these four people talking about who this one person is. And it's so unreliable. We talk a lot about unreliable narrators, and it's definitely unreliable when you have four separate people kind of giving their version of an event, even though it didn't really involve them. So I think it's kind of interesting. So I really like that. And that's basically all I read because I was at BEA and I've been super, super busy. But Callie, have you been reading anything interesting or have you been too busy writing?
I you know what? I actually took a break and read something earlier, right as BEA was about to start. It was The Inventor's Secret by Andrea Creamer, steampunk.
Oh, yes.
Main character's name is Charlotte, 16, and it's this really interesting beginning of America. Except there are these rebel groups, and it's really interesting, and she's a part of a group that is formed up of kids that live in an American version of the catacombs, which it sounds kind of odd, but I've really enjoyed it. But I also like kind of weird, quirky books, and I feel like it kind of has that twist to it. I've been reading that, and I'm enjoying it, so I'm continuing to read it, so that's always good.
We would highly recommend picking up the audio version of We Were Liars from Audible.com. And Audible is a great, convenient way to catch up on all your favorite books. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
So let's talk a little bit about BEA, because we were all at BEA this past week. And BEA is Book Expo America, in case you were unaware, and it happens in New York, and it's been happening in New York for the last several years, and it will soon move to Chicago, unfortunately.
But is that for sure?
As far as I know, yeah. After next year, it moves to Chicago.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, makes it a little more difficult. So the idea is that it's this huge kind of event. A convention, if you will, of books. Mm-hmm. And it's all the publishing houses and marketing and all these people involved in books at the Javits Center in New York, which is huge. They have these huge signings you can go to. You can get all kinds of ARCs. Just lots of crazy things going on. And on Saturday, typically Saturday, they would do a power reader day, so it would be open to the public. Well, this year what they did was they made it much more like a convention, and Reed Pop, who runs New York City Comic Con, came on board, and they ran BookCon and did a day for BookCon. And so the public could come in, and it was like a book convention for them. And there were all kinds of really, really cool panels and events on Saturday, and we'll talk a little bit about that, because Saturday was all kinds of craziness. But let's start with what did you guys like? What were some great experiences for you at BEA this year? What were some of the things that you were super excited you got to do this year?
Well, I'll be honest. My two favorite things were waiting in line for Holly Black's The Darkest Part of the Forest, and then also Air of Fire by Sarah J. Maas. And I waited a very long time in those lines and missed out on a few other things because of it, but it was so worth it.
Yeah, first of all, the Sarah Maas line was out of control. She writes the Throne of Glass series, and so it was the next book in the Throne of Glass series, and it's Air of Fire.
Right.
And it was just, I think it was like over a 2-hour wait, and that was to get her to sign it.
Yeah. Yeah, I got there an hour and 15 minutes early, and I was, when they counted me, and I have to give the BEA, like, line workers props on this, because they counted an hour and 15 minutes before the signing, and I was, like, number 93 or 94, and the thing is about it is that I after that counting, saw at least 15 or 20 people cut in line. Now, BEA, they were pretty good about coming around and making sure that people weren't cutting. But after about 30 minutes in the line, about 45 minutes before the signing, there were over 200 people in the line. And they weren't sure there were going to be enough books.
Yeah, it was – and that happened a couple times, because I know I really – the one book I kind of missed that I really wanted was Made for You by Melissa Marr. And that line was – crazy. And it wasn't just a book drop, it was a book and signing. So Melissa Marr was there to sign the books. They only had 75, and there were hundreds of people, because Laura was in that line for me, because I was at a meeting, and Laura, it cut off like three people in front of Laura, so we just missed it.
wasn't that one only a 30-minute signing?
Yeah, it was only a 30-minute signing. And so we kind of know that if it's a 30-minute signing, there are going to be less books. There's going to be less things they can do because they have very specific blocks and they're, you know, kind of set in those blocks. But, yeah, in the end, like, they didn't even have a lot of books. I don't even think she signed for the whole 30 minutes. Like, it was just the way it was. And it happens, and I totally get it. But I felt really bad for the people that had waited in line a really long time. Like, if they knew they had 75 books, I would have counted and let them know. But, like, hey, you know, this is what we have. If you're not here, you know, if you're past that or significantly past that, I don't know if you want to spend your time in line. But
right.
Because I kind of felt bad for all those people that waited a really long time and couldn't get anything. So they missed out, like, an hour and a half's worth of other galley drops and stuff because they were waiting in a line that they were never going to get a book for.
Should we explain how you get galleys at BEA?
Yeah, go ahead.
So there's a couple of ways that you can do it, or that they happen, basically. The first way is that you get there at, like, 7 o'clock in the morning, and you get online to get into the floor, like this is a convention, and you basically wait until they open up the floor, and then you, like, charge in, and you, like, just grab books.
Okay, you do not charge in.
Well, okay,
there are rules, Michal. There is no running, shoving, or pushing.
Once you get in, it gets pretty hairy, though.
It is a little untamed, if you will.
Well, and I think it also should be said that this is a convention for professionals at this point in the game. The first few days are always for professionals. So you're talking about booksellers, librarians, publishers, agents,
bloggers.
Editors. Lastly, there are also bloggers that have started coming to this. And I think when it comes to the charging, where I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago I would joke about the librarians pushing and shoving. Now I can honestly say the bloggers have kind of taken over that aspect of it. it gets a little hairy sometimes.
It does. It gets a little dangerous. So I just usually am like, whatever, I don't really need a book that badly. As much as I want that book, I'm not willing to risk a limb. Because as you walk around, like, the floor, you hear these horror stories of things that have happened, and you're like, what? Who does that? Like, really?
Yeah.
So, well, I don't know.
Yeah, and like McCall was saying, that they set the books out, and so you really do just get to walk by and pick them up. But when there are so many books laid out there, people don't necessarily walk. They either power walk or charge the booths.
it's also pretty crazy. The people handing out the tote bags, which are apparently, like, big. Like, tote bags are not valuable anywhere else. Like, they're valuable at BEA.
Well, you need something to put all those books in that you're gathering.
Yeah, but then there's special ones. Like, did you get the one? We were all really lucky, right? We were by Random House the first day, the second day, so we managed to get the Underwater Puppies bag. And apparently I had, like, a few people come up to me and be like, where did you get that bag? And I'm like, 3 hours ago at Random House. Like, I'm not a tote bag person. Maybe, like, I don't know. I have a friend who's a librarian or in librarian school, and she likes tote bags. So maybe it's, like, a librarian thing. But, yeah, that was also pretty crazy.
I think at Comic-Con it's like that, too. Anytime you can get – I think what it is, it's the idea of the swag is so alluring that people just want it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think about the floor at Comic-Con, and this is nothing like the floor at Comic-Con. I will say that. So I'm fully prepared for BEA because I have been to San Diego Comic-Con. So I'm like, it's just take a deep breath, and it's going to be okay. But, yeah, it does get a little intense sometimes. And I always feel bad for, like, the workers who are mostly volunteers. Like, there are stories of people getting yelled at by people. And I'm like, really? It's a book. Like, it's going to be okay. You'll get your hands on it eventually. Like, it's not the end of the world. I get that it's disappointing, but yeah. So, I mean, there were some really great experiences, too, though. Callie, do you want to talk about how you got to meet Alan Cumming?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I will say that that was kind of a fluke, and I maybe used my wiles on one of the workers in line, but it you had to have a ticket for it, and there are some very famous and popular authors. And they have those authors ticketed at the very beginning of the day. You can
and
go
by
to a special booth.
You mean like, well, by 7 a.m. Morning.
Yeah. 7 a.m. I mean, yeah, 6:30.
By the way, I didn't believe Jen. She was saying, like, I was like, oh, this is a professional event. It was my first time going with Hypables. Like, what time do you have to get there? Like, it starts at 9, you get there at 8:30. She's like, oh, no. You have to get there at 6:30 if you want a ticket. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And you should always listen to Jen. That is your lesson learned right
there. It's true.
This year I was like, screw it. I don't care about the ticket and signings. I'm getting there at 7:50.
Yes. And let me tell you, that day I had not gotten any tickets. I think I got the Lemony Snicket ticket on, I'd say that 10 times fast, but I got that on a fluke because someone in line was like, hey, I picked this up and I didn't really want it. And so I grabbed it for my kids. But when Alan Cumming was up in his line, I was actually lined up in the line next to it and, you know, kind of admiring from afar. And once I wrapped through that line, I came up and Alan Cumming's line was finished. I mean, there maybe were five people left in it. Again, you had to have a ticket, but there was a stack of at least 10 books on his table. So I just walked up to the worker at BEA and said, if there are extra books, can I just have one? Now, I have to preface this with the fact that one of my best friends had just texted me and said, I heard Alan Cumming was there. Can you get me the book? She had no idea it was a ticketed event. And I had texted her and said, there's no way. So this worker, then said, give me 1 minute. And he walks down to Alan Cumming's agent or, you know, publicist or whoever's with him, and then comes back to me and says, go ahead and go get in the line. And I was like, no way. And he was like, yeah, totally, just go. So I go get in the line. I don't have to have the ticket. Get up there, and I have have Alan sign it to my best friend. And then, of course, I end up photobombing this picture that he takes of the crowd. But I ended up getting one of his novels. And it's one of those crazy things that if you're in the right place at the right time, there can be those moments at BEA that you're like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I just got that novel. And I think there are other times when you really have to have priorities. Like, for instance, in the Harlequin teen line, I had to get there an hour early for Stone Cold Touch by Jennifer Armentrout. And that was one that, you know, like I knew I was missing two or three other books, but I wanted to get Talon by Julie Kagawa and Stone Cold Touch by Jennifer Armentrout. So I just sat there and waited. But again, and did y'all have any of those experiences where you're just walking by and poof, there's the book?
Well, that's how I ended up getting The Mortal Heart by Robin Lefevers. And I know Laura desperately, desperately wanted that book. She loves that series. And I love it too, but I knew it was something she really wanted. And she had been doing so much stuff for me that I happened to be walking by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And I was like, hey, like, when are you guys putting out, you know, The Mortal Heart? They're like, oh, in about 5 minutes. So I was literally like fourth in line. And I grabbed Michal and I was like, get in line. Like, she happened to be walking by. I'm like, get in line with me so that way we can get Laura one and I can have one as well. Because I was like, wait. I'm like, I would have given it to Laura, like, hands down first. That wouldn't have been an issue. But I was like, wait a minute, Michal, you're here. Come here. So
you do need to brag on yourself because you did make an awesome trade, I have to say.
I did.
I think I won out even though you think you won out.
See, it worked out best for the both of us then. See, Callie desperately wanted The Mortal Heart, which she missed out on.
Yes.
And she picked up Unmarked by Kami Garcia, which I missed out on. And I was like, oh, I really want to read that. So in the end, we ended up trading, because I can always borrow Laura's copy of Mortal Heart. So.
Right. Or we can just mail each other the book later,
we can
too.
Switch back. And see, that's the biggest thing, I think, when you go to BA, if you can go with a small group of friends, it's not that you have to get every single book, each one of you. It's that if you each grab one book and then share it, it goes so much further than trying to grab everything. Because there's no point in coming home with 8 bags of ARCs. You're never going to read them all. It's just not going to happen. So I would rather leave things for people that I know really desperately want them than, like, you know, get so many things that I'm not going to be able to read them all anyway. What would be the point?
Yep.
So, Michal, did you have any, like, crazy experiences or meet anyone that you were super excited about?
I mean, I did get on the Neil Patrick Harris line, and that was surprisingly, the first day I was like, you know what, like, I'll think about it if I'm in the area. I started way down at the other side, but I, like, made my way there, and I was like, oh, this is the Neil Patrick Harris line. I guess I'll get on. And so I waited for about, I don't know, like 45 minutes. I did end up missing like the YA editor's buzz thing, which I wanted to go to, but because these signings, like, they never start on time and they never end on time. So, right. Like, it, yeah. But I was really surprised that it wasn't ticketed. So, yeah, I just, like, got on, and I made friends with the girl next to me, and we were just kind of talking the whole time, and then, like, we got up there, and I was like, oh, you're Neil Patrick Harris.
That is super cool.
That is cool.
I missed all of those. I was so sad. I think for me the biggest thing I was bummed about is I really wanted to meet E. Lockhart and get my We Were Liars sign.
Oh, she was okay. Signing. No, you don't, because I got on that line. Okay, I wasn't really planning on it, but then the guy, I like walked by with my friend, and she was like, the guy who was at the end of the line, he was like, oh, do you want to get on the line? It's not that long. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. We got on about 5 minutes before it started, which I think it was a 1 o'clock
it
signing.
It was a 1 o'clock to a 2 o'clock.
Okay, it was a 1 o'clock signing. At 1:45, I got off the line. We were still, like, looping around other things heading toward the Random House booth. I was like, forget it. I wanted to go to something else, and I was like, I stood on that line with my friend for 45 minutes. It was insanity. Like, the line did
right.
not move.
But I, so, like, what I did, though, was I got over there early, and I got it, like, because I was probably only, like, wrapped halfway around, so I wasn't very far away from, the beginning of the line. Mm-hmm. I got there at 12:30 and the line had formed, so I hopped in line and got a ticket, but I had a meeting at 1, which is when it started, so Laura came and stood in line for me, and I was like, okay, if my meeting doesn't go that long, where I am in line, if I'm done by 1:30, I can probably get back and get in line myself and get the book signed, and I couldn't. I was stuck at my meeting. So Laura went through the line and got it signed for me.
Oh.
But I was like, that was the one thing I really wanted to do. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, so bummed, but it's all right. One of the things I got to do at BookCon on Saturday was I waited in Amy Poehler's ridiculously long line to hear her talk with Martin Short about her new book. And I have to say, I'm really excited to read her book. It sounds super funny. Like,
cool.
She's just so entertaining. So that was one of the cool things I did on Saturday. It was, like, one of the only things I did on Saturday. Because Saturday was BookCon, and it was kind of crazy. There were an awful lot of people there.
Keyword being awful. Not that the event was awful, but the people. Like, it just – I felt like that they had closed – and you should probably tell everybody – they closed half of the floor – to only BookCon, where they couldn't travel to the other side of the floor, and so BEA people could go to both sides, but BookCon could only be on one side. So it was like shoulder to shoulder at some points in some of the aisles just to try and get somewhere was practically impossible.
Yeah, it was definitely crazy. There was definitely not enough space.
Right.
So I think looking forward, they really have to plan on selling less tickets or creating more space for these people.
Yeah.
Because there were other things, too. Like, it also happened where, like, downstairs where they had all the panels, it was – the lines were everywhere. I mean, granted, the people that were running – the security that was running those lines and stuff downstairs are the same ones that run New York City Comic Con, and they were great. I think they worked really hard at it, but oh, my gosh. Like, the lines were intense, and there were so many people. Because there was a Cassie Clare and Holly Black panel. There was a John Green Fault in Our Stars movie panel. There was the Amy Poehler panel. There was a Veronica Roth panel. I mean, their programming was out of control.
It was amazing.
Big props. That programming was major. But I don't know if they didn't really think about it. I don't know what it was. But they definitely could have used a lot more space. To have people in the panels, because it was crazy.
The Javits Center, I have to say, for, like, being such an enormous space, and, like, I'm intimately familiar with how big the Javits Center is, I feel like sometimes I actually walk out of my, on Thursday, looking for some panel or other, I must have walked 20 minutes out of my way, like, downstairs, because I was like, oh, I know this, I've been here before, it's this way, it was completely at the opposite end, but it is so ill-equipped for those kind of lines. But it's so huge, I don't even understand.
Well,
you know?
Part of it is if it's set up like it is for Comic-Con, then it's actually, it's really set up well when they do Comic-Con there.
Right, that's true. They have the line but areas, yeah.
I don't know. I know there's some construction there in the Javits Center, so I'm not really sure if that had an effect on it, because typically, like, down the far end, there, where they had everything broken up to, into smaller rooms, that's typically one massive room, and it's the big room that they have for all of the really big panels that they bring to Comic-Con. Had they used that as the big room, then used the other one as the smaller events room, and then at the far end broken that down into panel rooms like they have it set up when it's for Comic-Con, totally would have worked out. But they didn't, and it was all cramped into, like, one little section, and I think that was the problem. They didn't have two big stages, which is, I think, what they probably really needed instead of just the one.
Yeah. I think with the big names that they had, the two stages would have been very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, they had amazing programming, and I think that this was the first year they've done it this way, and they've kind of brought in that really unique programming. If they continue, and I'm almost positive that they will, that with a little bit more practice, I think it'll go off much smoother and be a much more friendly event for everybody, because I think it was just really hard. I know the We Need Diverse Books panel was in a smaller room, and it was wall-to-wall people. I tried to get in, it was already closed, and there were still lots of people trying to get in, and they were really annoyed that they couldn't, and I guess in the end, they actually let them stand, like, they opened the doors and let them stand and like, crammed them all into the back of the room, because it was such a big deal. Like, it was awesome that they were able to do that, but at the same time, it was also a little crazy.
Yeah. I had the same problem trying to get into Cassandra Clare and Holly Black's room, which I don't know what I was thinking, but even just walking downstairs to get into the room, you couldn't stand in the hallway. The hallway was completely full. And so one of the guys working there said, yeah, we're at capacity, and they're not going to let anybody else even line up. So yeah, at least I knew ahead of time, so I wasn't standing there waiting. But I don't know if I could have stood there for very long without going into some sort of, like, anxiety attack.
Yeah, it was
like, so full.
It was pretty rough down there when they were waiting for those panels. But my favorite is, if you guys haven't seen, like, the pictures of what it looked like waiting for people to get into John Green's panel.
Oh my word.
Google it. You will get a firm understanding of what it was like, because it was,
you know what?
Crazy.
What's crazy is his fans really love him, and they really love each other, so they probably didn't mind very much, you know, as far as, like, having to be close-knit and hanging out together and all of that. I think it's funny because in other fandoms, you know, you have people like, I need my space, just, you know, like, and I love John Green fans just for the fact that they all are so quirky and different, and they kind of embrace that about each other.
Yeah.
So I bet they had a good time in that line.
Probably, but man, it was like just a sea of people. It was so crazy when it was, I didn't go downstairs. I just saw other people's pictures. I avoided the downstairs like the plague when I knew that was coming up, because I was like, nope, not happening.
Nice.
All right. So do you guys have any other thoughts about BEA or BookCon that you want to share?
I think we covered it all.
Yeah. I mean, something that I was they confused me this year, because the setup was sort of different than it was last year. Change in location really messed me up. Yeah, but no, it was really fun, and it's nice to go and kind of let what happens, you know, like, try not to be too invested in one particular thing, even though it's hard, but, like, you know, if you can do that, I think you'll have a much better time.
Yeah.
Very true. All right, so now we're going to talk about Miss Kelly's book that's coming out in 8 days.
Good Lord, it's crazy.
It is a little crazy. So your book is called Descent, and it's a YA. And tell everyone what the pitch is, because I heard it last night for the first time, and I was like, oh my God, that's so good.
It's kind of a Goonies meets Journey to the Center of the Earth. And it is a group of teenagers that fall underground, and when they do, they run into this tribe of people that, you know, of course they have some hot guys, you know, in the tribe. And one of my good friends, she likes to point out that one of the best scenes, and I think I actually already released the excerpt for it, is There's one scene where one of the guys comes out of the bath at, or the hot spring, and he's not wearing anything, and it's kind of a shocking experience for these teenagers that are from the surface. But the whole story is really about them trying to find their way back home on the surface, and then of course they need a guide to do that. So there are some volunteers from the tribe that actually take them. And there has to be a bad guy, someone that doesn't want them underground. But eventually they hope to make it back home, and that's kind of where the story takes you.
Excellent. All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about where we know you from? Because some people might recognize your voice on the podcast or...
Oh, heavens. You know, I don't know. I feel like I'm so far removed, but I actually was... I'm Callie Ross. That's from the Twilight Series Theories podcast. We did it for... pretty much the duration of the release of, I'm trying to think if it was New Moon. It was right towards actually the release of Eclipse, probably, that we started the podcast. And then about 6 months after we started it, the movies were being made. So, we did the podcast for several years, my sister and I, Cassie, and ran the blog. And of course did all of that really cool, fun stuff with Twilight that you and Laura did from Twilight Lexicon. Isn't that crazy to think about?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it feels like it, but it really wasn't. Like,
I know.
like when you think about it in leap years of like Hollywood years, yes, it is. It does seem like it's been a long time, but when I think about it on my calendar, it's like, oh, that's only like two pages away. that's where I think people know me. I also have a book review blog that I've done called Bookshelf Banter, where it's more of like video vlog reviews. So that's something that is there too, but not quite as popular as the Twilight podcast.
Oh, right. So what was your writing process like? Because you're transitioning from you're a school teacher, yeah?
Yes.
Teach English. So now all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to write a book. And you sit down and you write a book within a year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was tough. It was one of those things where I had this idea and just thought I'd go ahead and put it on paper. And because I do teach high school English, I kind of know how to write, but I know how to write research papers. So going from research papers to world building, it's a lot different. And I remember taking those creative writing classes in college, but it's been a while. And so I just started writing on Saturdays and during lunch breaks and when I should have been grading, but I finished the novel in about a year, and I kind of held on to it for a while because I was a little nervous about the idea of going from podcasting and book reviewing to actually putting something out there. A friend of mine convinced me, encouraged me to just throw it out into the wolves and see what happens. I'm kind of nervous about that part of it. But I'm actually writing my second novel because I enjoyed writing so much. And it is going faster this time just because I kind of feel a little bit more comfortable with the writing aspect of it and have a little bit of a schedule and a groove to, you know, grading essays and teaching and putting together lesson plans. And then every now and then I get an hour or two of writing about some fantasy world. So, it's an interesting process. It's probably different than the full-time writer. But it's something that I've kind of gotten used to, and I think that if you love writing, you kind of just will do it any way that you can.
Callie, is your book a standalone, or are there sequels coming?
I thank you for asking that, because I didn't even think about talking about that. It's actually a duology.
Oh, nice. I like those.
Thanks. I do, too. I'm going to probably start writing the second one this fall. I know that sounds kind of crazy to wait so long, but I actually have a work in progress that I'm working on right now to distract me from the release of Descent, if that makes any sense at all. It's something to do so that I don't have to actually read reviews and hear people talk about it online. And it sounds weird, but I just it's just so new to me. So I'm hoping that eventually, if this goes well, that releasing books won't be quite as nerve-wracking. But the second novel will be called Defend, and hopefully it'll be a shorter time frame as far as releasing it. It won't be a year, but maybe, you know, a good 6 months or so, because I'm writing a little bit faster now.
Cool.
Okay. So where did the story idea come from? I mean, underground tribes.
Yeah.
Falling to the earth, all kinds of crazy stuff.
It is crazy and it is weird. I have grown up in Texas.
But it's cool. It's very cool. What are you talking
about? Thank you. No, yeah, thanks. It is. It's one of those things where I grew up in Texas, and a few years ago, they built a natural gas tower behind my house. And I don't know if you've heard, if people anywhere else have heard, but there are actual earthquakes and tremors in North Texas that are happening because of this. And there have not been serious earthquakes in anywhere in Texas since like the early 1900s. So I just found it fascinating. And one day just was kind of thinking, what if like one of our neighbor's kids like fell in a hole or something in the backyard because of one of these earthquakes? And then I kind of took it a step further and thought, because I'm teaching, you know, what if it was one of my students? Like, what if a teenager fell down there? What would they do and how would they survive? And I probably personalized a little bit and thought of what I would have done if I were, you know, 16 or 17 and fell down there. But then I, of course, took it to the next level and thought, what if there were people down there like waiting for us? So it just kind of grew in my head. And I actually probably wrote the story in a couple of chapters, and then it just kept expanding and it kept growing. It was a short story at first, and then it became a novel. But yeah, the people aspect of it and the tribe aspect of it, I've just always thought it was fascinating to see those people that live in caves like around the world. I don't know if you've ever seen those, but where people actually live in caves on the side of mountains or cliffs. And they have their whole lives that they live in there. They raise their families in there. And they're all over the world, though. There's some in Asia and some in Spain and some in Greece. And I thought, what if all of them were connected somehow underground and people just lived under there? So, you know, with my brain, it just grew into this huge, huge story. So yeah, that's kind of where the idea came from. It started from a natural gas drill in my backyard and being afraid that I'd fallen in some hole someday.
So you clearly did a lot of research on these people that live underground. Did you find any cool facts out that you were like, oh my God, I need to use that? Or, oh my God, how is that even possible?
Well, you know, I was really curious about how they eat, how they get their food, because you don't think about growing things underground. I personally, when I think of things underground, I think of like worms and beetles and stuff like that. It just, you know, like I'm not a big fan. I like to do some like caving every now and then, but I found some really interesting facts on just root plants and vegetables. But I also, that's kind of where some of the fantasy elements of my novel come into play, because there is this fantasy element of a light that helps them when it comes to growing food and providing the light for them. Because you think about it, if you're in a cave and you live in an underground world, you know, you don't have a day or a night. And so little things like that, as far as traditional like tribes or groups of people that live in caves like that, you know, water resources, they have to use, you know, underground springs and hot springs. And so just that kind of stuff I found was very fascinating, because I love my indoor plumbing. And so it was one of those things that I did a little bit of research on, like, how do they go to the bathroom? Yeah. What do they do? Like, do they? Yeah. So just that kind of stuff. It's embarrassing a little bit to say that I Googled that, but I did. And so, yeah, I think that it's really neat. And I think that it's a whole different way of living, but it's not a bad way of living. But at the same time, again, I want to stick with my indoor plumbing. And so do my characters. They want to get back home and have a bed and not eat bat meat or you know, weird root vegetables they've never heard of or seen.
Awesome. So you mentioned your characters. Let's talk a little bit about them, because you have some interesting really, really funny characters in
this
book. You're welcome. So your lead female is Ollie. So tell us a little bit about her.
Well, Ollie is kind of independent. Her mom is a single mom, and she is traveling a lot. But it's one of those things where she and her mom are close, and she, for her senior year, has spent some time in kind of one of those exchange programs studying in South America. And when she comes back home for the summer, she hasn't seen her friends for a while. And, of course, they're relationships, some are worse off and others have just remained the same, and so she's really just kind of working through getting back in touch with her friends when all of this goes down, literally, and so she's kind of just in a place in her life where she's secure with who she is, but she's having some friend issues. And I think that at that age, there are so many teenagers, regardless as to if you're gone for a couple of months or not, you have these spats with your friends, and it kind of takes up your world. It takes up your, all of your emotions. And so that's kind of where she's at. She's like, oh, I'm so tired of this consuming me. And luckily she has a friend, Alexis, that helps to bring some comedic relief to all of those up and down emotions, because Alexis, I think Alexis is probably my funniest character. And I think we all need those people in our lives that are just funny and make us laugh. But Ollie wishes that her friend Mateo would come around and be her friend again. And so they all three, and then, of course, Mateo's younger brother, Jesse, they're the characters that all fall underground together.
I love Jesse and Alexis. They're just so funny. They're like this comedy duo that is just really sassy and fun. And it's a little flirtatious, but it's just really enjoyable to have them kind of have this back and forth, where Mateo might be a little bit more serious and a little bit more kind of angry in a sense for a little while.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love that whole dynamic with all of them. It's so great.
Thanks. Well, and Jesse's that little brother that gets in trouble. He's not so little, because the kind of trouble he gets in is the kind that Mateo has to watch him out, you know, watch out for him about. And that's, I think, a part, like, I'm an older sibling, and I felt like I was that way with my sister, and you know my sister, so you know that this is true, but I think that in that sense, Mateo, he is trying to be a grown-up instead of just being a kid, and Jesse, his little brother, is all kid and probably doing way too many grown-up things, but Alexis likes to put him in his place, that's for sure.
Yes, she does. She's very entertaining. So, let's see. So it comes out in 8 days, which is June 10th?
June 9th. Actually June 9th. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I know. Don't panic attack. That's all.
I know. Every time I'm reminded.
It's okay. So where can people find this book if they want to check it out?
It actually will be on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, all the major ebook retailers, it's not something that is going to be like an astronomical price. I think it's set at $2.99, and like I said, it, you know, anywhere you can e-read, you can find Descent.
Awesome. And why did you choose to just publish it as an ebook for now?
Well, to be completely honest, as a teacher and as a parent and as a person that wants to be at BEA and like all the little things that kind of add up, it was, first of all, just as a person that reads a lot myself, I tend to find that while I enjoy a good book, paper and all, I have been reading so many ebooks lately. And so that's one aspect of it. I just felt like it's more... it's just more practical. But at the same time, I am thinking, just depending on sales, that we probably will do a paperback, but just it probably won't happen until the fall. And part of that is timing. Part of that is how much interest is there for it. Because I feel like that most of my students read ebooks too, more than they do paperbacks or hardbacks. So, being a teacher, I kind of feel like I have a little bit of a good view of what some of the teenagers are reading and what they're reading with. So I was trying to just be practical about it. I know that sounds really boring, but,
no, that's good.
But eventually there might be a paperback edition. We'll see.
Okay. And Mikhail, did you have any questions for Callie?
No, I'm just really interested, you know, in the book, and it's an interesting choice to just, you know, put it out there. That's got to be terrifying. I can't even imagine. Yeah, I'm very impressed.
Thank you. It is terrifying.
But that's the dream, though. That's the dream.
Yeah,
it'll be good.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, well, we will put all the links for Descent in this podcast post so everyone knows where to find it on June 9th so they can go and pick it up. And thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate you having on and coming and talking about your BA experience and your new book with us.
Thanks. I loved it. You know me. I love a good podcast.
This is true. You do love to chat.
Uh-huh.
All right. So until next time, where we'll be talking about some book topic. I'm not really sure what yet. We haven't decided. And we will announce what our next book of the month is on our next episode as well. So
if you have suggestions, put them in the comments
this
below.
This is true. Any suggestions are welcome. We'll be happy to consider anything you guys would like us to read, as long as it's, you know, not too rough. On occasion, people throw something out there, and I'm like, what? In which case, I'm like, Karen, do you want to read that book?
That's a good book by its topic, like subjects we do not touch in literature.
That's true. Oh, maybe. Maybe next week. That'll be it. All right, so until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Michal.
And I'm Callie.
All right, bye, guys.